Okay. Thanks, Karachol, for coming. I wanted to be mamshich a little bit of share that we gave, I think it must have been 3 weeks ago maybe, on the halachas of buying and selling real estate property. And the reason I wanted to be mamshich is because a few people came over afterwards and said that there were some things that were still unclear, and therefore I just wanted to go over some of the shilas that we went over with a little more clarity, a little bit more of understanding of the fundamental principles, and also get to some of the shilas that we didn't get to last time. Okay, so the background, and it's this. Some of this applies not just to buying and selling property, but it applies all over. Mainly, what we were focusing on was the halachas of ribis, halachas of interest as far as it goes, as far as buying and selling property. So, the concept, the basic fundamental principles are the following: are two. Well, you want to know, how do you define a loan in halacha? How do we define what's a loan? I give you money, and a typical loan is, I lend you money, you have it, and you give it back to me in a year from now, 30 days from now. But there's really two things in halacha which define a loan. One is that the lender gives money to the person who's holding the money and doesn't receive anything in return immediately when he gives him the money. So the money is sitting with the lender, with the borrower. The lender gave the borrower the money, and the lender doesn't receive anything back for that immediately. So he puts the money there, it's sitting there, and in the meanwhile, the lender, didn't get anything back. So it's not a transaction, it's not a sale. There's nothing that happened, there was no transfer the other way back. It wasn't that the borrower gave something back to the lender immediately. So kol zman that the money sitting by the borrower without anything coming back from his rishus to the lender's rishus, that's considered a halva, that's considered a loan. That's number one, the first tanai. The second tanai, which is very important, is that the borrower has the full achrayas on the money. That means that the lender is guaranteed to get it back. The definition of a loan is that there's 100%, it's rachik mehefset, that there's 100% guarantee that the lender is going to receive back his money. And the borrower has the full achrayas on that money. So those are the two tanoim. If you want to know, when you're making a transaction, is it going to be considered a loan? Those are the two conditions you have to look at. Is the lender getting anything in return right now for that money that he gave? And second of all, does he stand anything to lose? Does he have any risk? Does the lender have any risk in this transaction? There's all the risk on the borrower. So you can imagine that if those are the two conditions, so a loan is not going to simply just be one case where Reuven asks Shimon, says, can I borrow $100? And Shimon gives Reuven the $100 to borrow. So yeah, there you have those two conditions, that Reuven has the money. He has all the money. He didn't give anything back to Shimon yet. And he has responsibility no matter what happens to that $100 bill. If he walks out the door and that $100 bill is stolen, he still has to give Shimon back the money. All the achrayas is on Reuven. So that's a loan. But you could have those two conditions even in a non-typical loan scenario where you try to make a purchase of something. And even though what you're trying to do is a purchase, we'll see, is really it's going to be defined as a loan. So the typical example which is given is, let's take it when it's not property. Stump, it's called Poiskan al Paris. A person goes to someone who's selling something and he puts down the money. He says, you're not interested in selling right now, or you may not even have it right now, but I know that you carry this item, you don't have it in stock. I'm giving you now the $100. And when you get it in stock, or when you're going to somehow get it, give me that tomorrow. Give me that, give me that item. But don't give me the item at that rate. I'm giving you the money now because I want today's rate. I mean, if it goes up, I want today's rate on that particular item. Well, yeah. Yeah, so that's what, even though the purchaser is really just trying to buy the item, he's not trying to lend money. But in halacha, that's considered a loan because you have these two conditions. The purchaser gave the money, he didn't get anything back for that. It's just sitting for free by the seller, so you have that condition. And second of all, the seller has full achrayas on the money. If he can't if he can't deliver the goods, he's going to have to give back the money. He can't say, well, I lost the money, sorry. So therefore, in halacha, that's considered a loan. Maybe it's only a derabanan loan, but it's considered a loan. And therefore it would be ribis if what you would end up giving is goods which are worth more than the money that you gave. And it could be...
It's back in return, it needs to be something tangible. Like,
no, so there's another thing also, is that...
Why can't he buy the rights to tomorrow's show?
No, because all you get... There's no such schus like that. It's a davar shel balaylam.
So it has to be something tangible, real.
Also, mice is not kaina. There's two reasons given. Either mice is not kaina or it's davar shel balaylam. So you're not getting anything now. But so if you're getting higher, more value than what the money that you gave was, that's a problem. And some it could be under so many circumstances, even if you don't actually get more. But you got the right, you locked into today's price. So even if it doesn't end up going up, but that alone you have the schus to lock into today's rate, that itself may be a ribis. What? What's the shlichus?
You're giving him money to go buy the price.
But it's not true, because let's say he buys it in China, and when it gets shipped, it gets lost. So you didn't lose. If he was your shliach, then if it gets lost in the Atlantic Ocean, then it's your problem. You don't own it until it gets to your house, Lamaisa. So he's not your shliach. As we discussed that, I mean, it depends. It could be it's not considered a shlichas for that. So someone just mentioned the case that comes up. There's two very common cases that come up with this yisoid when it comes to karka. Now you have to ask a shayla because every case is different. But the one common case is this we discussed last week. But I wanted to give more of the background so you would understand a little bit why it's a shayla. But the case is that people give money to lock in to a future house which has been built. You know, there's apartments or townhouses on construction, so you lock in, you give a certain amount, 10% down, and then you get the schus to buy the property when it's going to be built. But once it's built, to sell it is going to be much more money. So you're gaining money, you're gaining a better deal because you're buying it now. So essentially, if you think about it, the purchaser just gave the seller a loan because he gave him the money. The seller has the full price. If let's say the project goes bust, he's to give him back the money, and the buyer didn't get anything back in return. Now there's no house here. How could he didn't get anything in return? The house is just being built. So therefore, you have these two conditions, and therefore it would be considered a loan. And it's a problem because he's getting something which is going to be worth more than the money that he's going to end up paying for it. Yeah, but that's every loan is like, every ribbis is like that. I'm willing to pay you the 10% because I need the money for my investment.
So he's getting something.
Who?
The builder is getting something.
Of course he's getting something, but that's ribbis. That every time is like that. I'm willing to borrow money and pay you back 10% because I'm gaining something from the money you lent me. Of course the borrower is getting, yeah.
You can't see it
No, because that's what I'm saying. It's not an investment because, like, the other condition is that there's no risk. There's no risk. Yeah. So when there's no risk on the part of the buyer, and there's nothing coming in return to the buyer, that's a problem. In another case, someone said that this brought to my attention such a case like this. That actually happens. It seems like it's a funny transaction, but someone has an eye on a specific piece of property, and he can't afford it now, and he's bad credit, so he can't get a loan from the bank. So he tells the owner of the property, he says, listen, I'm going to pay you, you know, over 3 years, I want to buy the property, I'm going to pay you a certain amount, and eventually, once I pay you the full amount, then you'll transfer me the property. But in the meanwhile, it's still yours. So in the meanwhile, it's still yours, but I'm going to pay you the total what today's price is. So let's say it's $300,000 over the next 30 months. I'm going to give you $1,000. That's the math. Yeah. So what?
$10,000.
So right. So I'm going to $10,000 a month for the next 30 months, and then I'll pay you. Now, even if by the time the 3 years comes, it's going to be worth $400,000, but we locked into today's rate. So the first month, I give the $10,000, so I didn't get anything for that money. I gave him an end. If the property doesn't go, I'm going to lose. And therefore, I'm not going to lose. I'm sorry. He's going to pay me back. Because if he doesn't sell me the property, he's going to give back the money. Well, that's the arrangement. I mean, right? No, there's nothing to do with the Ramesh's case because I don't own the property at all yet. I'm not even gaining miktsas bailus on it. I'm giving him the money and every month, but if he doesn't end up selling to me, I'm assuming that the idea is not just to walk away with the money.
When do you take ownership? Only at the end?
Only at the end.
And in the meantime, who lives there?
He does, the owner. I'm just paying him slowly over time.
The owner's paying
why?
The owner lives there still. The owner's still living in it. He doesn't have to move out. It's a good arrangement for everyone. He doesn't have to move out. This guy wants to lock in today's price. So he's paying him slowly. He can't get a loan from a bank. So this way, he's paying him slowly. So he's giving him a loan, essentially. And that's why, because he's giving a loan, he's willing to lock into today's price. So that again is a problem. So that's just, those are examples of cases where it may be a problem based on this yusoid. That the borrower, the lender, I'm sorry, didn't get anything in return when he gave the money. He gave the money and it ends up being a loan. Now, the other yusoid that we said was that there has to be risk for it to be considered a loan. All the risk has to be on the borrower. So that means that the lender is guaranteed his money back. Now this is very important for another scenario. When two people just mentioned this to me in different contexts on this, and there was different cases and different halachas involved. But there was two actual cases that people brought up. One case, and basically the concept is the following: a person is in private investors give someone money, a company or an individual, they give someone money to go buy houses. To go buy houses, not wherever, you know, houses in where you can get houses for very cheap. The investor, you know, the company is gonna remodel the house, fix up the house, sell it at a profit, and then give the profits back, you know, 10% to the lender. Right? So again, you have a lender, a private investor is giving in $100,000 at a 10% rate. So he's giving it to this company. The company buys the house for $100,000. They sell it for, you know, $120,000, and they give back the 10% back to the lender. So the shaila is that a problem? If everyone here is Jewish and there's no, you know, there's an investor and there's a company borrowing the money to purchase these houses, is that a problem? And he wanted to know if he needed to write a heter iska for all the people that he, you know, he did this with 40, 50 people so far. So he wanted to know for the Jewish people that are giving him the money, is that a problem? So if someone else I'll get to the other case also a little bit later. So there's two scenarios. One scenario is that the home, when they buy the house, really belongs to the private investor. In other words, they buy a house, each house specifically belongs to the private investor that gave the money. And the company is really just a manager. So they're not borrowing the money at all in that case. They're just kind of taking the money, and then you have a shlichus. You're just taking the money and buying it, and while they're fixing it up, it's still under the name of the private investor.
They don't do it that way.
So this guy that it was Negea, Shaila, that's how they do it, and the shaila that they wanted to know is having people work in the houses on Shabbos, and you know who owns it exactly, but that was the case that the person, the title, was under the name of the private investor. So in that case, there's no shaila verbis at all, because then you're really, the company is just a shlichas to buy the house, and they're just managers on the property, and then they resell it and give the profits back or support back. Yeah. So they sell. Yeah. But in that case, it's not a shaila. But normally, that's not the case. Normally, the company owns the property. They take the money. They buy the property for themselves. They remodel the house. They do it at a certain whatever it is, and then they resell and gain the money. And they guarantee back a certain percentage back to the what? Oh, so kiputa, you would say that Lachoyer, you would have said it's a real loan in that case. The company's borrowing the money from a private investor, they're guaranteeing a 10% or 12% interest rate. In the meanwhile, what are they doing with the money? They're buying houses that they own, they're remodeling it, they're making their own personal investment and giving back the loan. But it really depends here if there's any personal liability. Does the company actually owe the money back to the, how does it structure? So this guy said the way it's structured is that the only lien that the lender has on the company is on the properties. So that means if all the properties go down, if the properties go down, then the borrower ends up losing. So in that case, it's not considered a loan, because remember, one of the conditions that we said to be considered a loan is where that is where the borrower is guaranteed back his money, and all the he has no risk.
If they own buildings from before this, I come in today, and then the building that they buy tomorrow goes down in value, but the buildings they bought, they owned for the last 3 weeks, did not. I can go if those buildings.
It's true. It's true, but
this building, I don't have.
No, it's true. That's true. But if they all go, if the whole market goes down,
as far as whether you're doing with my money, I have.
You're not guaranteed.
Yeah, but it's not a personal liability. It's a liability on all of their property. But
I lend somebody money.
There's a shibur aguf. No, that's a righteous whole thing. There's a shibur aguf normally. There's a shibur aguf. You have to pay me. I can go to you.
So it's because there's a shibur aguf on the company that I'm able to pay.
No, so they don't have it like that. They don't have it like that. They don't have any other assets. They just made it that your schus is that you can be tevea back from the houses that we sell.
But even the houses that they had owned before, I gave them
the money. Then he doesn't get his money.
Yeah.
So then, can I take a loan for $200? With rigus, but the only thing that's stupid is my house. And in case my house goes below $200, you know, possible, maybe. Then
so, but yeah, but when you pay him back, how are you going to pay him back? You're going to sell your house and give him $200? How are you paying him back?
Paying back, but if the only recourse is a lien on my house.
No, but that means that you have a loan is mechayev is meshabed you. He's not. How is he investing in? Here,
there are a lot of deals where make a deal and you say, and by the way, you only get your money to the extent of the value of this.
Okay, factory. Okay, so that's an investment. That's not a loan.
So when I'm
again, but
can I take a $200 loan?
Well, what's the chance that there's no? He's not investing. He's not becoming a partial owner in your house. I mean, these people are becoming partial owners in the company and all the properties that the company owns.
Well, essentially, he's become partial owner in my house. He has $200 in the loan.
You sold him the house.
He's really hoping that my house doesn't.
So that's what you did. So you didn't borrow the money. You sold him part of your house.
But I mean, that's not like a realistic risk.
Okay. So Nechanami. Okay, you're right. That's not realistic, maybe, but in these cases they are pretty realistic, and the place can talk about if it's completely not realistic in Nechanami. If it's mamash not realistic.
So what's the general rule that there has to be a component of realistic risk?
Yeah.
In order to be considered an investment.
Yeah.
And if it's 100% secured.
Then it's a loan.
Then it's a loan.
Yeah. The definition, that's what we were mocked in, is that the definition of a loan, there's two components, but the second component is that all the risk has to be on the borrower. If there's any risk on the lender, then it's really an investment, not a loan. He's investing and he's hoping to get back a percentage, but he may lose. It's called karav l'schar. He's more likely to gain, but in rachik mehefshid, but it's so possible he'll lose.
So I can lend money to a person with rivis if it's an LLC. I can lend five of
LLC. No, so this, not necessarily.
No.
That's what my okay. So you're asking. What he's asking is if you need to have a personal liability. So what about when you have a company, which is a corporation, which is an LLC? There's never any personal liability. But that's Moshe has a tshuva about that. But I'm not even talking about that. Moshe says it's mutter, but you know, but that's not even this case. This is where someone is investing in a particular. A company which doesn't have any other assets except for these properties that they're buying, and if all the properties go down, then they're not guaranteed. So it's really an investment. Just to bring it out a little more clearly, I wanted to just give a little bit of a background, because the Shiloh that the person was asking was, when the people give him these private investments, does he have to give a heter iska? You have to have a heter iska. So if you understand a little bit how a heter iska works, you realize that for him to have a heter iska in this case is really makes no sense, because the actual transaction is a built-in heter iska. It's not a loan, it's a built-in iska. Okay? So basically, the concept of a heter iska is, and we discussed this last week, I just want to clarify it one more time to make it more understandable. Based on the two principles that we said, you understand what an iska is. An iska, really, the translation of iska is a transaction, an investment. What we're trying to do in every heter iska is transform the halva, transform the loan into an investment. So that means that there's going to be a component of law of risk placed on the lender, and therefore, really, the money which is coming back is just a form of investment from the money that he gave. It could be a form he gave, and it's not really going to be a loan at all. So basically, what you say is that let's say Reuven is borrowing money from Shimon. Instead of borrowing the money, Reuven is taking money to invest. So Reuven is taking Shimon's money to invest, and it could go down. It could go up. But if Shimon is expecting it to go up 10%, and for Reuven, this is one way it's structured. For Reuven to say that it didn't go up 10%, he has to make a shvua d'oraisa in front of the G'dolei Hadar, and then I'll believe him that it didn't go down. But short of that, I'm going to assume that there's going to be a 10% gain on the investment. But it could go down. So really what you just did is that you gave him the money, you asked him to go invest the money. If it goes down, I'll share the loss with you. If it goes up, we'll split the gain. I don't know what's going on in your business. I don't really trust you so much. I'm going to assume there's a 10% gain, unless you prove to me others. How are you going to prove to me otherwise? Only with this special type of shvua. No one ever makes such a shvua, and therefore you're guaranteed your 10% back, basically. But really all you did was, the whole point of an heter iska is you're transforming a loan to an investment. But where it's really an investment, like in this case, it's taka, an investment. You're not transforming. You're not really doing a loan, just signing a document. You're really making an investment. You're giving the guy money. You're saying, go buy these houses for me. If it goes down, I lose with you. If it goes up, then we split. Or you guarantee me a certain percent back. So there's no point in where there's a real tzad that the borrower is going to lose money. You don't have to sign a heter iska because it is an iska. It's a built-in iska.
Can you do a heter iska with a non-religious Jew who would make such a shvua? If he's a smart guy and he says, show me this thing, and he looks at it, he reads the contract, he's Israeli, reads the contract, reads all of it, and he says, I'll make this shvua.
You could sign it, but then you have to take the risk.
Are you allowed to put the...
The Chassid Tzchak has all tshuva that there was taka such a case that a bank had a bank in Eretz Yisrael. You know, and there was a non-religious guy that said to the bank, I want to make the shvua.
Sure.
You know, and I'm going to make the shvua, and if all the money that you lent me went down, and I bought something with it, it went down, and that's it, I'm not going to pay you back. So there's a whole shvua, what you can do in that case. But, in the chanami.
Well, what does that do for him? What does that shvua do?
Because then he doesn't have to pay. He borrowed money from the bank at 10%. So he's going to tell the bank, I lost the money.
So?
So I don't have to pay you because we're in this together. You didn't give me a loan when you invested with me. The bank, when you're going to a Jewish bank and you have a heter iska, the bank is not lending you money. The bank is investing whatever you're investing in. So,
And how does that work? So does that mean that they're not responsible for the money anymore?
If they make that shvua, so it doesn't, no one really knows what they're signing. But now the thing why it's very important to understand it is because this is the way it works. If someone's borrowing money, let's say from a family, a relative, a family member, they're nice enough to lend a very significant sum of money to allow their children to buy a house. But they're not going to charge them as much interest as the bank, but they're going to charge them a little bit. They just whatever money costs them, let's say they could borrow, whatever it is, they're charging a little bit of interest, so they sign a heter iska. Now, the thing is that they know exactly what the child did with the money. What did the child do with the money? He bought a house in the neighborhood, right? So, what are you going to tell the child? I'm not going to believe you. You're going to sign a heter iska saying, I didn't lend you the money. I actually investing in your house with you. And if the house goes down, I'm down with you. But if it goes up, I'm up with you. And, same arrangement. And I'm charging you 3% interest just, to cover my cost to lend you the money. So I'm charging you this 3%. The problem is that if it's a private house and you know exactly what the house was, and the father also lives in the neighborhood, what's he going to say? I don't trust you. Maybe it went down. I mean, he knows exactly what the investment was. You can just go look it online. Is it, where is it holding? What's the value of the house? Right? So it's very hard to make such an arrangement on a case where everyone really knows everything that's going on.
With the internet,
no, but if I lend you money, I don't know what you invested in. I mean, you could have gone, you invested in five different things. I don't know what you did with the money. But here, in this case, I know exactly what your intention was. The kid is buying this house, and now I know exactly where it's holding.
Yeah, he's paying the money. He's using the money to buy it. So they all know.
A Jewish bank on a mortgage? In the Hanami. In
the
Hanami.
The
good. So in the Hanami. Who says you should do it with a Jewish bank with Heter Iska?
In
the Hanami.
The price could fluctuate in the house also. That doesn't make a difference?
It could. In the Hanami, it could, but. All I'm saying is that it's hard for the father to say sign a shtar. I don't believe you to tell me that the house went down unless you pay me the 3% or whatever, because it's pretty clear what goes on. So those are the halachas that come as far as interest goes, and we discussed some of them last time. I just wanted to clarify again. There's another very interesting sugya when it comes to buying and selling real estate, and that is also, it's very negeya, and it's a din. It's called dina de bar metzra. It's a halacha that you mechuyev, and it's a question who this din is on. But the halacha is that a neighbor of a property that goes for sale has precedence over a non-neighbor to buy a house next door. So that means if a house goes up for sale, and you know it's a good deal or whatever it is, Kolzman that the neighbor, the person who lives on either side of the house, wants to buy it, according to halacha, he's allowed to go first. There is, sure there is. First of all, you may want to expand. Yeah. As long as it's not a fence or something you can't knock down. In other words, as long as it's not something that it's impossible to connect. If they're separated by a street or something like that. But if it's a neighboring property, the halacha is, Dina de Bar Metzra says that you have to, the person living next door takes precedence. Now the question is, who's this din on? Who's the din on? That means that it's the obligation of the seller to go offer it first to the neighbor, or is it the obligation of the other buyers to, you know, make sure that the neighbor does. Who's the chiv on, the mecher or the lekeach? So it seems like from the person that the chiv is on the lekeach. So it means that if someone's about to buy a property and he knows that maybe the neighbor wants it, he's not allowed to try to beat him to it or get him first. As a matter of fact, the halacha is that if he buys it, the neighbor he's mechiv if the neighbor wants to sell it to the neighbor, even once he already bought it. He's allowed to medina. The neighbor's allowed to come and buy it back from the person that bought it.
Who pays for all the closing fees? That.
So it depends how much of a hefsid they'll be in the chanami. But
he
you
has
know,
to reimburse it all.
I don't know exactly how it works lemaisa. You know, back then, you know, in Shulchan Aruch, I guess it was lawyers charge less.
The offer price doesn't change
things. What? No, so the moich is amuchiv to lose. The moich is amuchiv to lose. So then, if the non neighbor is willing to pay more, then enachami it's different. But if it's just a question of running to the bid, and the neighbor is there and he wants to have it, then the other potential buyer has to let the neighbor buy it. And the sma and the mishnah and the gemara really is mashma that the makar for this din is al tzvasis avi yashav atoif. There's no real makar for it, there's no real din, but lemaisa, just think about it. For the neighbor, it means something to get this house. For the non-neighbor, you go take your money and buy a different house somewhere else. What do you need this one for? So al tzvasisa v'yashvatoiv, you're supposed to be mevater, and let the neighbor take that property. So you see that it's mamash halach and shulchan aruch. This vasisa v'yashvatoiv. You know, be a nice guy, but being a nice guy is a mitzvah vasisa v'yashvatoiv. And he's mamash supposed to be. It's a whole siman of shulchan aruch. What the dinim are, and he's supposed to be mevater. someone said one time that in we talk about the Maila of being Mevater, and the Chorban Mesa Mikdash was because Shehemidu Divneim al Din Torah, and he wasn't Mukhiv to be Mevater, but if I'm not Mukhiv, the Chorban came because people, I wasn't Mukhiv to be Mevater, so I'm not going to be Mevater. And he was Mami Divneim al Divre Torah. But the MS is that you see from here, see Savi Ashtar is Mechayiv for a person to talk to be Mevater sometimes. And I heard one time someone said that in English there's a word for someone they may you know there's a word for someone that's mevater. It's called a wimp. We you know you think this guy he just gives up everything. Don't stand up for yourself. Stand up for your rights. But according to the Torah, there's an inyan of asisa ve'asherat toiv to let go sometimes. And it goes so far that even this is very nageya here especially, is that someone that lives in the city has priority over someone that doesn't live in the city. That's also a din of bar mitzvah.
Living in the city as an owner or as a renter?
As an owner. It's not clever. But as a...
If he has to own some houses here, that would help him?
No, or not.
I mean, if I live in the city, but I don't own a house, do I have precedent?
I'm not sure about that. I don't know. But a toishav in the ear. Now, this din of bar mitzvah is a little different than the other din, because here, if the non-toishav, if the person who lives in the other city bought it already, the toishav of the ear doesn't have a schus to go buy it back. You can't force the other guy to sell. It's not bedieved.
But if
the din of lokeach.
So if a guy from
out of the city is bidding together with a guy from the city. Now again,
if any guy from New York who comes in, he wants to do snatches. If
he's willing to pay more,
no, he's paying less. He got it for $85,000. I'll be thinking, go to him and say, Rabbi Gid, sell me the house for the price you bought it for.
No, if you're a bar mitzvah, if you're mamish the neighbor, if you're just a toishav, if you're a toishav, then lechatchila he's not allowed to do that. But b'diavad, you're not allowed to do a sell with him. What? Okay, maybe that's different. I don't know. I'm not sure. But so that means that Lamaisa, this is a din of the lekech. Another very, 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 very negadika one is let's say someone's renting the house and the owner of the house wants to sell it. And the owner of the house wants to sell it. And the person living in the house wants to buy it. So, is he a bar mitzvah? Is he allowed? Does he have a schus on the house more than another person wants to buy the house? In a way, he's more of a bar mitzvah. He's mamash in the house already.
But he's only a renter.
So on the house that he's renting, he's a bar mitzvah. So that means that if a house goes for sale, and there's already a tenant in the house, then the tenant wants to buy it, someone else can't come in from the outside. An next door neighbor is bar mitzvah.
What about you renting the house?
No, so a soicher on the house next door is a big machlokes, if that's called a bar mitzvah.
What if the neighbor wants to buy the house you're renting?
That's what I'm saying.
Your neighbor, the not wants to buy your house.
Two people want
what does that do with me? What does that have to do with the soicher?
Which one of the bar mitzvahs is stronger? The person renting or the next door neighbor?
Sure.
Can he buy it off? Could he have to sell it to the renter? If I bought the house while it was rented and rented
it,
does he have to sell it to the renter now?
Does the renter have a schus to misalik the outside guy? Also, I don't think b'diavad. Only lechatchila, I think.
Can the owner sell it to his
a karav?
Yeah.
A bar mitzvah is stronger than a karav. But a non-karav is stronger than a...
But he wants to sell the house for like 15 grand.
Okay.
So
a matana, there's no bar mitzvah on a matana. Okay, so I don't know, maybe that's called a matana, I'm not sure.
The property has three neighbors. It has a back door neighbor.
So all three have a schus before anyone else.
Does one have a priority over the other?
They have a schus, kifi, how much neighboring property there is. So in other words,
what if it's all equal?
backyard.
No, there's no specific one that would have a more of a schuss than the other one.
So a backyard neighbor in this neighborhood would have a bigger.
Why?
Because the properties are generally
wider than they
are.
He would have more of a schuss, but that just means that he could buy 60% of the house and he could buy 40. Yeah. So that they could be really good neighbors inside. But there's another very negeah halacha also. Now this is all, like we said, is on the lokeach. The lokeach is mechuyev to, he is not allowed to buy it from another bar mitzvah who's another lokeach. But so there's a din on the moicher also. The din on the moicher and the seller is that someone, a yid, is not allowed to sell a house in a Jewish neighborhood to a guy. He's not allowed. And the reason why he's not allowed to is because it says in halacha is that the guy is probably, that's what it says, the guy is probably going to end up being mazik, is going to end up causing some sort of damage to the Jewish neighbors, and therefore it's a groma benizikin. By selling to a guy, he's being goyrim, he's indirectly causing damage to the other Jews in the neighborhood because he's bringing in potential damage, and therefore even the groma benizikin is potter, but you can't do it lechatchila. And you're not allowed to sell, so you're not allowed to sell property, a house, in a Jewish neighborhood to a guy.
What's the gather?
Well, this is, I think it's talking about metzers, bar metzers, if there's Jews on as neighbors.
I mean, so on my street, where I feel like I live in Haitia,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, what constitutes a Jewish neighborhood? What does that mean?
It means that, like you're saying, is it close enough to... I have to look more carefully if it means mamish neighbors, but very often it's neighbors also. But does it just mean neighbors? Or does it mean anywhere that's close enough that it's potential to cause nezek to the Jews in the neighborhood? And this halacha applies even to... This is very negaya. Applies even to schiris. Even to schiris, if a yid owns a house in a Jewish neighborhood, I'm just saying a Yiddish neighborhood, but like you're saying, I don't know exactly, you have to know the get exactly, he's not allowed to rent it to a guy, because that will, is very, very likely to cause a hezek to the yid in the neighborhood.
Is there also for a broker?
That's the favor?
You're not doing the schiris, you're just helping someone, yeah, you're with naiva, missing, yeah.
But you're saying he's also being good according to this.
It's a move.
I don't know, but this was something that Rabbanon Lakewood made a big deal about this, that there were people that were buying houses and renting them in the Jewish neighborhoods to investors who were buying houses and renting them in the Jewish neighbors to non-Jews, and it was very, you know, with music and all these other things that were bothering the neighbors, and the Rabbanim Lakewood made this halacha be known to people that it may be also to do that. So there's two dinim. There's a din on the lekeach. That's a din that the lekeach is not allowed to buy a property against the bar mitzvah. There's also a din on the moicher, or the owner of the property, to sell it. You have to be careful to keep the integrity of the neighborhood, that if there's a Yiddish neighborhood, you should be careful to sell it or rent it dafka to Yidden to keep the neighborhood kayam. And Shasem Shal Bizoich and the Schus of the Vasisa Vashivatov, we should follow the Midas of Kadosh Baruch Hu, Chasama Shal Kadosh Baruch Hu MS, and Shasem Shal Bizoich Ataka to be kind of that Midas of MS, and in that Schus, we should see the Eskalos having me remember.